I Will Never Be Your Beast of Burden. Those were the Rolling Stones. This is your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host, Glenn Klein, and he is the author of the book on the Rolling Stones, The Sun and the Moon and the Rolling Stone, and has agreed to join the Power Rotation on your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host program. Please welcome back to WRJN, Mr. Rich Cohn. Good morning, Mr. Rich.
Good morning, Glenn.
Happy birthday to Mick Jagger yesterday, 72 years old.
72 years old, and he's about to become a new father, and he's already a great-grandfather. So you can figure that's like biblical stuff.
That is biblical stuff, no doubt. There is biblical-type stories in your book. What's your favorite story in the book?
God, there's so many. I always think of, you know, I like the stories that tell the stories sort of behind some of these songs. And I love the classic Rolling Stone story, which is Keith Richards always sleeping next to a tape recorder in case he had any ideas, and he wakes up one morning in a hotel in London, and next to him his tape recorder has been recorded over, and he wonders who did that, and he picks it up and he can hear himself apparently in the middle of the night playing the riff of Satisfaction. And that's where it came from. It came from like his subconscious in a dream or something. And I can never hear that song without just thinking of where it really comes from, which is just the dead of the night comes from the gods.
I can't remember which inventor used to do this, but he would allow himself to become sleep deprived and would sit on a chair with some steel ball bearings in his hands.
Yeah.
Because you know in that place in between being awake and falling into deep sleep, that's
yep.
where a lot of the creativity comes from. How much do you think the genius, not only with the Stones, but so many artists, both musically and in the world of art in general, have come from because they just don't sleep very much?
Well, I think that part of the creative part of your brain, and I say this as somebody who's sitting writing all day, it's almost like a different part of your brain that you don't normally have access to because all the noise in your head kind of blocks it out and shuts it off. And you can sort of get, if you can get to it, that's where everything comes from. And, you know, you know this because often you'll have, like for me, if I go to the gym and work out really hard and then take a shower, it's like when I relax and I stop thinking, that's when I get good ideas. I think that's why people do like transcendental meditation, people do drugs, people have sleep deprivation. Whichever way you can get access to that, you know, it's there, but it's like buried. And I think that's probably what happened to Keith Richards in the night. He always said that his songs, he always said that he didn't write, sort of create the songs. He was the medium for the songs. The songs were out there, and they kind of passed through him. And there's probably some other metaphysical truth to that. But also, it's just this idea, this feeling that it comes from somewhere else, which is from some other part of your head that you don't normally have access to. That's why right now being like a writer or anything is a weird thing, because right now our whole society is so noisy. It's so hard to get any quiet moments in your brain. You know, that's one of the reasons why you don't have as much great stuff as you used to, I think.
What do you do, what do you not do to quiet your brain with all the noise that is in our society?
I have a hard time doing it. I mean, I go to the gym sweating really hard. It sort of makes it, it's like a physical thing that causes you to relax. And, you know, I don't know. It's really tough. It really is tough. So, you know, I develop little tricks, but I'm not a master at it by any means. I just think that you just have to try to get away from all that stuff and shut it off. I remember one time phone broke for whatever reason, and for like 4 hours I had no phone. And honestly, I felt like I'd been on a vacation in Hawaii. You know, and I could do that at any point, but I don't. You know, it was forced on me, and I sort of think that if all the phones went down for like a couple days, everyone would be like, we just woke up from a long, long sleep.
There's a meme going around on Facebook, and it will show this multi-million dollar mansion. And the question is, if you could have this house, but you had to give up Facebook for a year, could you do it? Would you do it? I can't even believe that that's an actual question.
I think people wouldn't. I honestly have thought that if someone was on a plane and the plane was going down, they would think, you know what, I think we're below 20,000 feet, I can check my messages. You know, it's an addiction.
It's an addiction.
It's the whole society addicted to it, and it's what makes a lot of the politics and everything kind of shout. because when you get an, I always think about this. When I was a kid, I knew exactly when the mail was coming. When I was a little kid, I didn't care about the mail. I didn't get anything. But when I was older, like when I was waiting to find out if I got into college or something, I would know when the mail was coming, and about 10 minutes before, I would get anxious and excited, you know? And then the mail would come, and I would look through it, and usually I would have nothing, and then I would relax again. And that happened once a day. Now that is happening 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
You're always in that moment of waiting for the mail, and it's driving everybody nuts.
I think you're right. He is Rich Cohn. He is the author of The Sun and the Moon and the Rolling Stones. This is Glenn Klein on Community Conversations on WRJN. And he is also, as is yours truly, a former camper at Camp Menominee in Eagle River. Mail call at camp was huge. I mean, that was your contact with the rest of the world. Even today, up north right now, kids are not allowed to use their tablets. They're not allowed to use their cell phones. And they really go through a withdrawal when they go up to camp for the summer.
Yeah, and that's like one of the great things that we wasn't an issue when we were kids, but that's one of the great things about camp, because my kids go to camp, and it's like they get completely shut down and shut off from that, and sort of like their world comes back, is what I feel like. If you can shut all that stuff down for like a day, the world comes rushing back in, you know? And it's like a real hard thing as a parent to try to keep it out, because on the one hand, you don't want your kid, you want your kid to know how to use this stuff because it's what everybody's using and it's important. But on the other hand, you feel like they don't have any connection to the actual world because they're completely walled off from it by all the technology. So I do think it's a great, great function of camp. And, you know, and also those letters my father used to send me when I was at Menominee, and he was traveling a lot, and he would send postcards. You know, he'd be like, you know, at a hotel in Calgary working, and he would send me a postcard. I have all those postcards.
Oh, wow.
And my father had this great thing because he traveled so much, and my brother and I always wanted gifts the minute he got in, and he couldn't afford to get us a gift five times a week. So he decided that we would start collections. My brother had a hotel soap collection, and I had a hotel key collection. And I still have that. My goal was to have a hotel from a Holiday Inn from every state in America, you know. And because of email, I feel like all that's gone.
Of course, Rich's dad is the renowned negotiator, Herb Cohn. And sending him postcards at camp. Did you keep any hotel keys when you used to travel with the Stones?
No. I think by that point it was already the key cards. You know, and every now and then you come across like a hotel that's kind of funky and it has like a nostalgic old key. But remember when I remember you'd come back from Minnesota or somewhere and you have a key that was shaped like a big pine tree, you know? And you'd get these really weird keys, which were the best things. And at one point, there's a really funny thing where I had all these keys and they all had postage included on them. Remember that? Like if you lost them, you can put them in the mailbox and they'd be sent back.
Right.
And my brother took a whole bunch of my hotel keys because he was just being a jerk. And he put them in a bag, and he put them in the mailbox just to watch the mailman struggle as he carried them off down the street.
Your brother could be a bit of a jerk when you were a little kid, couldn't he?
He was a typical older brother, 5 years older than me. He'd always start stories by saying, this happened the very best time, that is any time before you were born.
Well, right now in the North Woods, I was referencing it to the great Tom Carco at the bottom of the hour during or after his newscast, is the big Camp Menominee and Camp Cahuaga competition. And Tom asked, he said, is it akin to like the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry? And I said, no, way bigger than that. Because these are people who are now men like you and myself who literally have stayed connected one way or another to one of the camps their entire lives. We were there. We competed. And I remember when I was the director at Menominee, we had a camper named Mike Dunleavy Jr., who is a famous NBA player. He's now with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was with the Bulls. Of course, he won a national championship with Duke University. And the year after, or the summer after, that Duke won that championship, where Dunleavy hit five threes in the second half to lead the Blue Devils to the national championship, one of our campers, a kid named A.J. Sweet, was down at the Duke basketball camp, and he knew that Dunleavy had attended Menominee when he was a kid. And so AJ goes up to Dunleavy and says, Mr. Dunleavy, my name is AJ Sweet. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I go to Camp Menominee. And without missing a beat, this soon-to-be multimillionaire who had just won an NCAA basketball championship said to AJ, "Did we beat Quagga?"
Right.
that's the level of competition and intensity that the kids experience. That kind of experience when you were a kid, Rich, with experiencing competition at that high level, how much did that prepare you for life and for what you do now?
Well, I think, you know, completely. It's sort of I always say it's the stuff that happened at Menominee is like the most vivid stuff that ever happened to me. And I remember not just the games against Quagga, but preparation for the games, you know, the night before, the build-up, getting the jerseys. And you know, what it was like to lose and what it was like to win.
Yes.
And I just think that, I mean, I hope that's why sports are the greatest thing and so important, but I just can't say too much about it. I mean, it was a huge, huge part of who I am is Cam Menominee in those games. And I always feel like sort of, you know, Cam Menominee is always kind of there. I mean, it's like it's inside me. It's like with such a, it was such a great thing to go up there not knowing anybody when I was a little kid and then feeling like you kind of made your own world. My brother didn't go there. So it was like my own thing, you know. And I still feel that the people from that who went to Menominee, they kind of understand me in a way no one else can, and vice versa. It's like being from a little tiny town that you only know if you lived there when you were small.
Well, not only did Rich write the ultimate book on the Rolling Stones, but he also wrote the ultimate book on the Chicago Bears called Monsters. Huge Cubs fan, so I've got to ask you, do you have any moral problem with the Cubs getting Aroldis Chapman given his domestic violence history?
I mean, a little bit. I mean, I was, when the Yankees got him, I was sort of like, eh, because the funny thing about a lot of these things, like, you know, even Reyes with the Mets, because I'm in the New York area, so read the New York papers, it's like, we don't really know what these guys did, so I can't really say. But just theoretically, you hear about a guy that did something to his wife or whatever, and something happened, and what's the difference between that, you know, and the guy who's now spacing out on the Ravens, you know, who punched his wife out, knocked his wife out in that elevator in Atlantic City. The difference is there's no videotape, you know, or there's no film, I should say, or tape. So it's like, that's the weird thing about it. If people can't see it, they don't really care in the same way. But if they can actually see it, if there was video of whatever Chapman did, if it was truly bad, he would not be on the Cubs and he would not have been on the Yankees. On the other hand, you know, we don't know what the guy actually did, and he does throw the ball 105 miles an hour.
That's a very good
point.
You
know, and if you're a Chicago Cubs fan, I don't think there's anyone alive on the earth now who was alive when the Cubs last won the World Series. There can't be now. Because it was 1908, so I don't think there's anybody that old alive. Maybe there's a random person. So, I mean, you have this weird thing where as you get closer to actually getting the Cubs into the World Series, it starts to dement you a little bit.
You want to hear here's an incredible statistic, that the last Cubs championship in 1908 was closer to when Napoleon was a dictator of France than we are right now.
Yeah. I know that.
That's insane. That's,
I mean, it's crazy. And you think about who was alive. I mean, a guy who'd seen the Cubs last win the World Series was somebody, you know, who might have been, you know, a young man in the 1830s before everything in a completely different world. You know, so it's. I don't think there's anything close to it as far, and it's mysterious.
Right.
I mean, why the Cubs haven't won just by the law of averages. You know, there's that great Steve Goodman song, The Cubs Fan's Last Request.
Yes.
And he says, the law of averages says anything will happen that can, but the last year the Cubs won a National League pennant was the year we dropped the bomb on Japan.
I'll tell you sometime in our next conversation next month what I think it is and why I'm a little concerned even for this year. But that will have to wait till next month.
Okay, you're going to make me... Maybe you'll ruin the rest of my summer if you tell me too soon, because I'm actually thinking, you know, when I was a kid, I so carefully avoided the jinx. I never said the Cubs are going to win the World Series. I never said I thought they were going to make the playoffs. But last year I decided I'm just going to jinx them every chance I get, because obviously not jinxing them hasn't worked for me at all. You know, I haven't carefully not jinxed them, and they have not gone anywhere. So, and I would always hear Yankees fans in here in New York talk about how they're going to win the World Series this year, and often they did.
All right. Well, I will give you.
The Cubs are going to win the World Series.
I will direct you to the answer to what has jinxed the Cubs. It's not the Billy Goat anymore.
Is it Wrigley Field itself?
It involves Wrigley Field, but we're friends on Facebook. All you got to do is go to my Facebook page and look at my cover picture. And
I will tell you this that I know, because I did write a whole story about why can't the Cubs win the World Series, where I tried to research this, or get to the World Series even. And the Cubs were, you know, pretty much the best team in baseball up until the point that they moved into Wrigley Field. They have never won in Wrigley. They won a lot before they were in Wrigley. And the only team to ever win it, only home team, I think, I don't know if I'd have to think about it if there's any away team, but the only home team to ever win a championship in Wrigley Field is the Bears in 63.
That would be right. Well, last year when they won a playoff series at Wrigley Field was the first time ever.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But you know what? I think that what's amazing about the Ricketts is that, you know, for years that people wanted to refurbish Wrigley Field and do this stuff, and no one would ever let them because of the tradition. And the Ricketts did it. They just somehow just said, we're basically just going to make a few little changes. And though it looks the same and feels the same, they changed it.
I think it looks better. Have you been there since the new video?
Oh, yeah. I've been there a bunch of times. I always said that they operated on the body, but the soul is intact. I mean, it's still clearly Wrigley Field. There's still the best park in baseball. There's still nothing like it, but I agree, they made it better, and apparently they made it better for the players, like in the locker rooms and stuff, and that's, like, very important for recruiting people, because Wrigley Field locker room was like, you know, a high school locker room up until they did this. So, and players didn't want to play for the Cubs because of just the facility sucked, you know?
Well, the best thing they did was when they refurbished the bathrooms, they kept the trough urinals in there. That was critical, no doubt.
Well, remember the show, The Sports Writers?
Sure.
I once heard a 20-minute discussion about those troughs and how it was bad for the game because a young boy would be scared by the experience and would be lost to the game of baseball.
No, that you got to step up, man. You got to man up at those urinals, at those troughs.
It's definitely like one of those things where you pass through the eye of the needle, like some make it and some don't.
He's Rich Cohn. He's the author of The Sun and the Moon and the Rolling Stones. He's going to be joining us monthly. Thank you, bro, and beat Quagga.
All right, let's go. Great talking to you.
Your radio friend is AM 1400 WRJN, Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, a Magnum.media station.
That was fun. And on this hump day morning, WRJN covers the world.
Would the assassin to be free? Freddie Gray update. I'm Evan Hanen. A judge has ruled.